Hey, Bourbon Podcast guys, get a real job. Sent with love. Hearts XOXO from Dixon Deadman and 2XO Whiskey.
You're going to enjoy this episode if you're a Blanton's fan. We got all the guys here. It's nice to have everybody here.
It is. Miss you guys.
Joe, Kyle.
Never the same without Kyle.
It is not the same without Kyle. We did that. We did the Booker's Proof Positive, the 2401.
You guys always do that every time I'm gone. You guys did Stag without me. You did Booker. Like some of my favorite bourbons in the world, y'all. You guys pick them. It's offensive, honestly.
On Ben, on this one, because when he said, let's do the Bookers, I'm like, oh, Kyle's not going to like this.
Yeah, you actually did. You did say that. You reminded me.
I'm like, because that's your sweet spot. Six to 8 years of age, barrel proof, uncut, unfiltered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know. All right, Kyle, are you a Blanton's fan?
I mean, I like it. I think it's a relative value thing, right? Like, I will never turn down a Blanton's. Do I think it is worth what a lot of people pay for it and the attention it gets? Yeah.
Okay, Joe.
Depends on the release. Like I'll drink this straight from the barrel all day long. I think it's got good value, but you know the standard Blanton's. Honestly, I'm not really looking to pop that bottle.
Yeah, that's. I mean, not just, surprisingly, yep. The straight from the barrel would be the one I go with.
Yep. Me too.
So we're sipping on some Blanton's Gold, and it's because we have the author of Warehouse H, Dominic Guglielmi.
I think so. We'll
That's
find
what I'm
out.
Going with.
Yeah, we'll find out.
We'll let him correct us. Yeah.
How old is Dominic? I saw his picture. It looked kind of funny.
I don't know. We'll find out. You can ask. Yeah. That can be the first question you ask.
how old
are you? What's your driver's license number?
That's right.
I want to know your date of birth, your weight, your height, everything.
What's your favorite color?
How did you get this gig?
In depth. Yeah. Well, he actually talks about it in the book. So I bought this book. I don't even know how long it's been, but I took it on vacation with me and read it. It's really good. I mean, the book is very entertaining. He was not a bourbon guy. He started in, and I'm going to let him tell the story, not me, but he got into it in 2017. I don't think he'd ever written a book before, and we got him
now. I'm excited.
And apparently has one of the most extensive Blanton's collections ever.
Yeah, I was saying to you before we started, I had no idea the number of special releases, particularly in other countries. I mean, I've known they do a lot overseas, but sheesh, I had no clue.
Yeah. So we just posted that probably about an hour ago on Instagram that we were going to interview him. And it's surprising how many people have already messaged us saying how excited they are about this interview. So we will interview him in just a moment. He's going to tell you all about how he got into Blanton's, writing the book. We'll ask him about his incredible collection and maybe some Blanton's history questions, which are all in the book. We'll see if
come sell some books, man. You know,
sell some books. Yeah. I bought one, and you know, the copy that I got was autographed. I didn't realize it, and somehow I got an autographed copy. I do not know where.
Did you get that at Buffalo Trace? Maybe.
I don't think so. I got it online
because I think they actually feature it there, so it looked pretty good.
I mean, why not?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I don't think I bought it. At the distillery.
I'm sure it's on your questions, but list of questions. But I really want to hear more about the La Maison du Whiskey. And releases, they're just really unique. That's the one thing I'm really curious about.
You know what I should have done was put for people to submit questions, because I'm sure there are a lot of people that are more into Blanton's than we are. I enjoy Blanton's for what it's worth.
We got like 20 minutes. Hit them up.
We could probably put it out there. Let me start with some news. And by the way, when I do the news, I just scroll through and find things that interest me.
In case you couldn't tell.
Like, it really has, there's so much going on, and I just feature the stuff that I like, so I apologize. If you want all the news, you can get on our website, bourbonpodcast.com. We have a news page. You can go then. It's like scrolling. It's updated all the time. But let's talk first about Old Fitzgerald 13, the 2024 release. On April 2nd, Heaven Hill announced the release of Old Fitzgerald Bottled in Bond 25th Anniversary Edition, commemorating the anniversary of Heaven Hill acquiring the historic Bernheim Distillery in Louisville. And along with its Old Fitzgerald brand, they also bought that. Comprised of 13-year-old barrels, this edition ushers in the latest release to the Decanter series, and adds to Heaven Hills Distillery's bottled in bond legacy. And then the press release kind of goes through the history of it. And Joe can tell you there's usually a spring edition and a fall edition, but then every now and then they release the VVS, which I understand is just like the gift shop.
Gift shop.
So this is a VVS. It's a 13-year VVS.
What does VVS stand for? Sorry.
I don't know what it stands for. Let's see.
So they did color code the labels, and so the red labels are distillery release only.
That's okay. I didn't know that.
The green labels, the wider was the green. I think there's like a black or whatever label. And Ben, we're going, not you all, since you've got a conflict, but Friday when we go pick out that barrel to Elijah Craig.
You think they'll have some?
That's a gift shop release. I mean, I hear they put a few out every day, and they kind of spread it out. So we've put a couple of feelers out there with them, let them know we're coming, that we expect the royal treatment.
I'm sure.
And that we hope they will put a few of those out there. There's also the William Heaven Hill,
those are
17
so
year, 120 proof.
Ugh.
I'm just hoping that,
do we have that one yet?
I just got it in.
Okay.
When was it did not released? Come to West Virginia. I had to trade for it. I don't even know it'll ever hit here. That Heaven Hill, that's the Heaven Hill, that's one of Kyle's favorite because most of those are barrel proof.
Wouldn't you take that over an Old Fitz? I would.
I would.
It's a 17-year too.
Yeah, I'd do it in a heartbeat. Yep. It's not only that, it's just that barrel proof. And
what's the label color on that
It's orange, I think.
What do those label colors mean anything?
No.
They're just
random. No, they're just alternative.
They've done an orange label before.
Yeah, like third release or something like that. Yep.
All right. So since 2018, there have only been two other VVS releases, including 2018, which was a 14-year-old, and 2020, a 16-year-old.
Very, very special.
Is that what it stands for?
I bet you
that's pretty smart.
The 2024 edition will be available in the 750-milliliter size on an allocated basis as an exclusive.
No kidding.
Oh, shocker. As an exclusive Kentucky release to select retailers and the Heaven Hill Bourbon Experience in Bardstown. It meets the strict requirements of bottle and bond, the product of a single distillery from a single distilling season, aged a minimum of 4 years and bottled at 100 proof. The edition is available MSRP of, guess, Joe?
$229.199.
Yeah, did you look this up?
I did not look it up.
Oh, I was going to say like $350.
$229.99.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, you looked at it.
No.
I did not look at it.
You nailed that to the penny.
Good job.
It's just, that's usually their price point.
And
right,
he is
there.
So imbued with bourbon market knowledge.
Yeah.
And he's a banker. So it's like it just comes to him. He's like seasonal.
Numbers are there.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, the 13th probably release? Because I think you have all down here in your bunker. You probably can count them.
So I think that's what you said.
13th, right?
He just knows it, but I think that's what
you said. It was six. I only know because it was 6 years times two is 12, two a year. And so this would be the 13th, the seventh year.
But there were two VVSs.
It's so okay.
12 plus two equals 14. This would be the 15th release, right?
It could be. See, that's where I don't have my book with me. I'm kind of losing.
Joe needs a calculator.
But I also wonder, even on those VVS, did they only do two of those years or do three of those years? I've got it. It's three, right?
They did three.
Yeah, you're right. So
they did
it is
spring,
going
a fall,
to be
and a VVS.
15th, I think. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So it is it's a 68% corn, 20% wheat, and 12% malted barley. How many have you tasted? How many do you think you've tried of the various releases?
You know, maybe three of them or something, maybe four.
Oh, you've got more than that.
I probably had four or five. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, Ben, those are just bottles. It's more appealing to me, like crack those William Heaven Hills open than probably the decanter series. I mean, I'm sure they're great. I know you look forward to popping those. They're right at 100, right?
They're bottled very long. Good. Yeah. But to me, those are like, that's one of the few bottles. If I get offered, I'm going to buy it just because they're beautiful. Or if someone's looking for a special bottle, it's like, look, this is a gorgeous decanter.
Right.
The liquid's good. Yeah.
It is good. I think the 17 year, which I think that was 2023 or 22, because they did a 17 year and a 19 year. The 19 year to me was not, honestly, not that good. I was underwhelmed.
It's getting pretty old.
17 was really good.
Mm.
Really good. And I've had the 10 and there's another 13.
Mm-hmm.
Year that I've had, it was good. I think there's a couple of bottles down here open, maybe in the other room.
Oh,
great.
Bourbon room number two, folks.
At least I'm not as bad as There's one guy that posted, he's got like, he's run out of space. He's actually storing, oh, that one dude, Ryan, on, he came on, he was one of our first guests.
Yeah.
He's actually storing it in his bathroom now. He's
Oh
out of
boy.
space. All right. So anyway, that's coming out. If you see it, grab it. Good luck.
Yeah, if you're at the distillery
Yeah.
or you have somebody in the area.
Joe is going to get me a bottle when he goes this weekend.
You know, I wish they would let you take more than, I think you're maxed out at one bottle
Yeah.
per person that
Probably.
drivers license you. And
Oh,
I don't even
yeah.
know if that means if I have to choose between the two, right? Can you get one of the decanters and one of the 17s? What if I had to choose between the two,
You
you
get
know?
the 17.
The only reason you wouldn't would be because it's a distillery release, that red label. They were, Ben will tell you, those are brutal to track down
They are.
because they're so,
What are those going for? Like, I'm, it probably depends on.
yeah,
It depends, but
on the.
the so the I think one I saw, because I started looking online to see if this one was already out, because I know they released it in late March, even though the this press release was April 2nd. But and they're anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500, depending on,
Jeez.
those red labels, yeah.
yeah, the VVS.
Yeah, that, I mean, that feels right, I guess.
All right, check this out. Bourbon Barrel Ownership Service offers bespoke travel, tasting, and distilling experience. As the bourbon boom continues apace and whiskey aficionados look for new and interesting ways to engage with their favorite brands, one company is introducing a travel, tasting, and distilling experience. It's called the Kentucky Bourbon Retreat. And basically, you go there, you have dinner, they show you about the process, and you can create your own mash bill. Like, you mix different barrels,
That's cool.
and it's basically you do 10 barrels and they will bottle it and do, it's a customizable experience, and you can get whatever the barrels yield times 10.
What is the, what are they
I
getting you for
think,
that?
35 G's.
yeah, and I
Oh,
think,
that's actually, I mean,
for 10 barrels, I thought,
yeah.
you know, if you had 10 or 15 people go in together, 20 people go
Oh, if
in.
you, I mean, I just looked. I was telling you before we started, Sazerac, have you signed up? Like, there's like almost a contest to do a private barrel, and it's like some interesting stuff, like a stag junior. I mean, those are 12 to 13 to 14. Now, you got to
Right.
let it age and all that, but
Right.
35K, I mean, this sounds crazy, but I'm like, well, on a value basis.
You got to set those barrel. I think you set them aside, and then they actually have, they'll buy them back from you. I think at some point you can actually sell your
Yeah.
barrels. They have a value, but you have to sit, you know, sit for a long time. It reminds me of, we were talking about getting that guy on from Burren Distillers, and in Ireland, that's a big thing over there right now, is, you know, buying into
Oh
the,
yeah, you mentioned
buying
buying
the
one and
barrel
just
and
sitting and
storing it
waiting.
there, and just every time you go to Ireland, you stop in, see how your barrel's doing.
Well, this gets in, we were texting about this, but this gets into the, to me, one of the most interesting things about whiskey right now, which is like, where are we in the cycle? And 5 years ago, that would have been a fantastic investment. Is it still today? If you want to let these age 5 to 9 years, like, I probably, but I don't know, man.
There's a
Production's
lot.
ramping. Like,
Yeah, it is
yeah.
big time ramped up.
And, you know, if you're looking at the secondary market right now, it's not, things are really slowing down.
Yeah. So combine that with the fact that production is ramping. We're going to have, I mean, I think we're going to have a glut at some point,
Yeah. I
which
think at least
for sure.
domestically, but the, you know, the wild card will be, if they can just figure out a way, the same way that they did in Scotland, the Scotch, to make it an international
Yep.
liqueur, you know, liqueur or a whiskey, and find ways to really export this stuff out, because the demand's huge out there, and they're not getting anything,
No.
nothing compared. So, like, there may not be, there may be more demand than supply if the world market opens up. But I don't know enough about the international laws and,
Yep.
you know, what that would take. But I think that's the real saving grace if that opens up. But I mean, it's a whole new ball game.
So back to this bourbon retreat, which I want to do, by the way.
You didn't like this path, this
No,
random path we were
I
going
want to
down.
finish this. So it's, you become a distiller for a day. You get to work with real distillers, and they and it says pricing for the group-centric activity is $35,000, depending on group size and barrel yield, which includes two newly distilled bourbon barrels with a complete bespoke, completely bespoke mash bill for full participation in the distilling process
Wait, two
from
or 10?
10 barrels.
10. I'm sorry. I thought you
10
said
barrels.
fit.
I guess you blend them.
Man, yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting. You could 10 barrels is a lot of whiskey.
But
yeah.
you get
1500 bottles.
You get dinner, hotel accommodations, the tasting. That'd be pretty cool.
I like the idea. I do. I do like it. I don't like the idea of spending $35,000.
Yeah, but think about this. If you're 150 bottles a barrel-ish,
yeah,
it's 20-some dollars a bottle. Like,
but how many years?
Yeah, how many years?
Six, 7 years.
Are you really going to sell it? No.
Are you going to wait 7 years for it? I guess it could work. I mean, you know, if you got a group, I mean,
you'd want to do it with a group, I think.
Yeah. Oh, it has to be. Yeah, I think you get 10 or 20 people together. You go in, you split it.
Yeah, 10 people. You each be effectively each get a barrel. You get, you know, a mm-hmm. tenth of 10 barrels. I don't know. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. What would you do with 150 bottles?
Well, you know, when I the first barrel I participated in was three of us.
The Four Roses barrel?
Yeah, the Four Roses barrel. And we each had like 60 bottles. I mean, you'll be surprised how quick it goes. I mean,
do you have any of those left?
I have six bottles.
Do
and
you?
I'm hoarding them. I want to open them.
I have one.
I have two. Yeah.
Oh, out of my.
You have two of Joe's or Kyle's?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's funny because that one is.
I got that bottle before I really even knew Kyle. I'm like, I think I know this person on this label.
It's a coveted bottle.
Oh, yeah.
Really good bottle.
It is. Yeah.
I was just at my sister's in Los Angeles for spring break with our kids, and they don't really. My brother in law, like, isn't a big, he's a tequila guy, which is fine in Mezcal, but they had an unopened one, like, on their liquor cart. And I was like, don't open this. Do not let anyone who just walks in here open this bottle.
So that wasn't, help me, was it an OBS?
OESF.
OESF. And it was gold neck, like 2015 ish.
Mm-hmm. 14. So, yeah.
14, 14, 15. It's a pretty amazing pick.
All right. We've rambled enough. Let's let's get Dom on here to tell us all about Blanton's, all about Warehouse H. And I'm going to ask him lots of questions about his collection. Stay tuned. Are you enjoying Bourbon Podcast? Be sure to leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. And by the way, thanks for listening. I've been hyping this one up because, like our next guest, I am a tater. I am proud to be a tater. I love my Blanton's. I will buy it and put a shelf and just dust it. I don't care. Now, I drink a lot of them too, but up now we've got Dominic Guglielmi, and he's the author of Warehouse H. Now, Dom, thanks for coming on. Blanton's gets a lot of grief for some reason. So
it sure does.
I'm not sure why. So I've got, you know, I'm the noob here on the podcast, and I haven't been drinking bourbon that long. Kyle and Joe have been at it a bit longer than I have, as their livers will attest to.
Yeah. Indeed. That's why I work out twice a week now.
But honestly,
I play tennis 3 days a week.
But one of the things that I really enjoyed Blanton's. Now, that was not the first thing. It was actually New Riff that kind of hooked me.
Really? I love New Riff.
It was New Riff. New Riff single barrel that kind of hooked me. And then I got into Blanton's and Blanton's Gold, Sherry in the Barrel. And your story is somewhat similar. So tell everybody, how did you get into bourbon?
Yep, no problem. Well, first and foremost, thanks for having me. Big fan of the show, and really, really excited to be here with y'all today. So, how I got into Blanton's was very similar to a lot of people. It was one of the first bourbons that I tried and sort of was recommended to me as my journey in the bourbon world began. And it was interesting because I didn't know much about it. I didn't know much about bourbon. We're going back probably 2017 or so. And I think I knew about Maker's Mark, didn't really care for it. Never really was a whiskey guy of any variety. And, everybody was talking about bourbon, and it was blowing up. And so naturally I started getting interested. And my old boss, she was a big bourbon connoisseur. I guess you don't want to say drinker, that implies the wrong connotation. but she gifted me a bottle. She said, hey, you might like Blanton's, it's pretty popular. You know, it's got this cool horse and everything. And you know, I tried it. I don't know how much I really thoroughly enjoyed it. It was alcohol and it was, you know, it did the trick, but I was captivated by the bottle. And, you know, score 1 point for marketing. It really kind of captivated me. And I said, I want more. Well, we all know how that road leads. And I couldn't find it anywhere. And this is, of course, 2017. And I live in Ohio. Our prices are fixed. And so it just flies off the shelf. You know, it doesn't even sit there at some obnoxious price, like in some states. So I couldn't find it, turned to the internet. And, you know, that sort of began this journey that led me to essentially assembling the largest collection of rare Blanton's bottles known. So it's been quite the experience.
We're going to get to that part. We're going to get to the collection, which I wish people could see this. This is why we need a YouTube channel, because I need folks to see. But luckily, his collection is online. I mean, you categorize everything. It's online. Tell everybody your website.
Yeah. So the website is warehouseh.com. And there you can find all of the pictures of every known release of Blanton's, including all the rare ones and collectible ones. And there's also a link to my personal collection, which has, you know, sort of the shots of the basement that I designed around the collection and some of the close-ups, things like that.
Yeah, that's so I went straight to that. Like, I just bypassed everything. I went straight to the collection. And one of the things that you have that I did not know existed, you actually have a hazmat Blanton's.
Yeah, I do. It's so it's interesting. There was a release done in 2006, 2007 for Japanese customers. And it was called My Only Blanton's. And they did several, two different bottle labels. One of them is a metallic, very beautiful, actual metal label. And the other one was a more simplified paper label. But both of them were Japanese only. There was 6-7 barrels for each release. And one of those barrels was 141.9 proof. And so there's only 5 of those labels known, the My Only Blanton's metal label. Of those 5, there's only 2 of the 141.9s known, and the other one has been opened and drank. So I have the only known bottle of the highest proof hazmat Blanton's bottle. There's others out there, most likely in Japan.
Now, is it like the Mona Lisa? Do you keep it behind like bulletproof glass?
I do. I have that one occasionally, yes. But I do have a couple other rare ones that are actually under a glass case, and everything is fully insured. That's absolute because it's just too much value sitting around.
It's like the old Pink Panther movie. Remember that? The glass and the alarm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Like, that's right.
Like, you got high school kids, got to have that.
All right, so your boss gives you a bottle of Blanton's. You can't find it in Ohio on the shelf. You get online, and then now you have the biggest collection known.
Yeah.
How in the world did you assemble such a collection in such a fast period of time? Because I think that it started in 2017. Am I right?
Yeah, really. And the serious collecting didn't start until 2020, probably. COVID probably is when I started kind of going crazy.
You didn't use a bunch of STEMI money on Blanton's, did you?
No, more than that. No, all legitimate source. It was as you said, you know, I found online, you know, my first discoveries were just some of the what I call the current expressions, the 7 varieties that are currently produced today, most of which are distributed internationally. And so I was finding like the Takara Black and the Red, which are Japanese versions. And at the time, I was traveling quite a bit for my my job to Japan. So it was like a perfect connection where I could now hunt for some of these quote unquote rare bottles in Japan. And so that I did that. And so pretty soon I had the full lineup. I had like all 7, you know, straight from the barrel, the special reserve green. And I thought I was done. But the problem was, certainly as I Googled Blanton's and all of its varieties, I started running across labels and you know, different bottles, which were more exotic and, you know, kind of different looking than any of these standard varieties. And that's really what led me to start warehouseh.com. It was to simply catalog all of these varieties because it drove me nuts every time I was on a message board or Facebook or somewhere and people would post a picture and say, what is this? You know, and the question had already been answered, of course, somewhere else. And, you know, the knowledge was out there, but there was no collective source for all that knowledge. So it really started off first as an obsession with just documenting the varieties more than anything. And then I never really thought I'd collect them, but I sure did.
And at what point did you say, you know what, I think I'll write a book?
Well, so that kind of stems from, it stems from the collecting in the sense that my passion was at first to document the brand just on the website, like I said. And then soon after that, it was to start collecting, and that became obsessive. Very much, I admit it in the book, it's an OCD tendency, I'm sure. And after I had hunted nearly all of them, and I was down to just my last few that I've now since acquired, I just wanted something else to scratch the itch. You know, there was nothing, the fun is in the hunt. I love looking at them, and it's a wonderful place to have friends and visit. But I'll be honest with you, I had a little more fun hunting them than looking at them. And so I needed to take the information I had learned over the course of my hunting and acquiring all these bottles and share it. And I'd also sort of along the way noticed that a lot of authors either only gave Blanton's a passing mention or repeated the same stories from the past about the brand. And some of those stories weren't 100% accurate. They were more marketing than facts. And, you know, I had learned a lot of facts that I just wanted to share and sort of set the record straight.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, Dom, explain to everyone the connection with Japan and especially, you know, for Buffalo Trace, like why the wide variety of releases that were connected to Japan only, and like, how did that all come to be?
Yeah, absolutely. So the brand, so Buffalo Trace, up until early 90s was owned, the previous owners of Buffalo Trace were two gentlemen, Ferdy Falk and Bob Baranaskas. They're the ones who bought the distillery in the early 80s. And under their leadership, they launched Blanton's with, of course, Elmer T. Lee. And by the early 90s, they were looking to divest their distillery and sort of, you know, get out of the business. They were getting a little bit older at the time. So they had already partnered and actually sold a fraction of the company to a Japanese company, Takara Shuzo. And so Takara basically acquired the rest of the distillery, all the assets, brands, et cetera, when they decided to sell out. Takara did not want to get into the U.S. distribution or the sort of intricacies of distilling whiskey itself, running a distillery. So they immediately, behind the scenes, they'd already found a partner with Sazerac, and they immediately spun off the distillery itself to Sazerac. And so that's why Sazerac owns the distillery. But the brands that were produced at that time are all still owned by Takara. And it's owned, the company in the U.S. is called Age International, which is sort of the U.S. Subsidy of Takara. But so still today, you have, you know, Rock Hill Farms, Elmer T. Lee Bourbon, Hancock President's Reserve, you know, a few others, Ancient Age, those are all owned by Age International and Takara. And it's essentially a contract driven relationship. So they're contract distilled, I guess, if you will. Buffalo Trace gets all the credit for them and the hate. And behind the scenes, it's really the Japanese market. And that's why Japan gets special releases, gets, you know, things that we don't, because they own it.
And so if we go into Europe, La Maison du Whisky, for the listeners out there, because I have a bottle, it's a like a 2018 release. It was 138 proof, north of that, right? It's an unbelievable bottle.
Really?
Yeah, it's like probably one of my most prized bottles I purchased several years ago. But the connection to Europe and La Maison du Whisky and all the varietals they do there, like, where did that come from?
So that, it's a great question. I talk about that a lot in the book as well. And essentially, the owner, the son of the original owner of La Maison du Whisky, who's a French alcohol importer, and they operate several retail stores, his son went to college in the U.S. And so he sort of fell in love with bourbon here. This is early 2000s. And when he went back to France, he essentially asked his father to start carrying Blanton's. And I'm actually incorrect. It's late 90s is when they started importing it into France. And so by the early 2000s, they had established enough of a relationship with the distillery. And of course, again, this is early 2000s, so bourbon wasn't nearly what it is today. They established a great relationship with the distillery and effectively said, hey, we'd like to bottle, we'd like to have our own picks. They're very instrumental, La Maison du Whisky, in the Whisky Live Festival, which is a festival held throughout the world. They run the French version of that in Paris every year. And so they started these annual releases specifically for La Maison du Whisky, and they continue to be some of the more prized bottles, some of the older ones quite valuable, and really excellent pours if you ever get to drink one, because they are truly the best of the best. I mean, it's not regular Blanton's by any stretch of the imagination, not just because of proof, just because, you know, they're being hand selected.
You know, Ben, maybe we need to have a little party. I'll break the, we'll open the bottle, and we got to do it the right way. I've had it.
If we're going to do that, we're going to have Dom down.
Oh, that'd be
we're in Ohio.
I'm there.
Where
I'm in Columbus.
Oh yeah.
You're 3 hours.
We'll see. Yeah. We're on our way.
That's right.
Yeah.
Come to our bunkers. Yep. We have great bourbon collection down there.
I'd love to. It's 3 hours door to door for me to Buffalo Trace. So I make that journey quite often.
So you know, Buffalo Blanton's gets the people credit Blanton's as saving the bourbon industry.
Yeah.
But yet it gets so much grief. Why is that?
Well, and so I definitely credit it. You know, the title of the book, it's the story of Blanton's Bourbon, America's Most Influential Whiskey, subtitle. And so I do that, and the argument I make in the book is because it was so pivotal. When it launched, bourbon was in the gutter. Nobody wanted it other than Japan, and nobody was looking for a top-shelf bourbon. The closest thing to it was really Maker's Mark, which was it had advertised it as a premium-type brand. But even then, of course, Maker's Mark wasn't a single barrel product. And so when this concept came out, it was revolutionary. And it definitely took a while to take shape and take hold. But where other authors sometimes get it wrong is they mention, you know, how unsuccessful Blanton's was during its early years. Well, it really wasn't. It sold out of its original allotment that they produced.
Yeah, still, I think you said 2,500 cases. That's right.
Yep. They sold out of that, and certainly a lot started going to Japan, which helped. But they released, they being Buffalo Trace, Ancient Age, or Stag Distillery at the time, depending on who you talk to. But they released other single barrel products soon thereafter, including Elmer T. Lee's bourbon. And then what you had was other distillers releasing small batch products. And so collectively, these, you know, super premium products really eventually took hold. It took a while, but they helped give bourbon a top shelf. And so, you know, I make that argument in the book much more detailed, but I think people just don't, you know, they love to hate. It's easy to be a keyboard warrior on the internet. Blanton's does deserve some hate. And I try to take a fair, you know, point in the book and really make the argument on both sides. But I think people just don't know. And that's just it. You know, they don't really think about or understand or educated sometimes to the nuances of what the brand did and where its place is in bourbon history.
We're sitting here sipping on a Blanton's Gold that I just picked up.
It's so good.
Dump date. It's actually the dump date's a little older than I expected. It's October 6, 2022. I just got it at my local store. They held it back for me. Got a little lucky.
The relationship.
Yeah, the relationship. All right, Dom, I'm going to ask you the hard question. The house is on fire and you can save two bottles. Which ones you save?
Definitely that hazmat and the sterling silver bottle. Right. One of the two. I have two of those. So I guess I'd leave one of those and get the hazmat.
So the you have photographs of the sterling silver bottles, page 137 of your book. Are these the ones you own, or are these just?
Yes. Yep. Those are mine. Yep.
So you've got a prototype and bottle number 42.
That's correct. Yep.
Love it.
So the dump date on these June 25th, 1991. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
And
they were a commemoration.
When
I
say it was
a
sterling silver.
Yeah. Let me see.
Bottle, the whole bottle.
Yeah.
We're not talking about Blanton silver edition.
Yeah.
The right, silver right. label that was,
the you know, whole bottle yeah. is yeah. You know, silver.
Yeah.
Which I've never yeah, seen. I looked at that online too, but the,
yeah, there's only about 15 of them known to exist. There was 100. The sources vary. I think in my book, I might have mentioned 115, 120. Recently, since I published it, I think we've discovered one more bottle number that's over 120, and also a proof of a letter from, or actually it was an advertisement, believe it or not, that I just acquired from Buffalo Trace from back in the early 90s, advertising it for sale for, I think, $7,000. No. It was on the back of like a mailer that they sent to customers. I just got that. I haven't put it up on social media yet, but there they mentioned 150 bottles. So I think possibly up to 150 were made, but only about 15 are known to exist with collectors like myself.
So when you published your book and the website, did a lot of people come forward and say, "Oh, I have one of those," and you had to update? And
you know, great question. And surprisingly, no. For some of these super rare ones, what's interesting is if somebody puts up one of those just on a random Instagram post tomorrow, I'm likely not going to be friends with that person or whatever, but word travels fast. And so occasionally I will get, you know, I think it was a few weeks ago, one of these, my only Blanton's bottles I mentioned earlier, the hazmat bottle, popped up, and it was, you know, within 10 minutes, I've got people coming at me at all sides saying, "Did you see this? Did you see this?" And I haven't seen that with some of these more rare ones, like the sterling silver. They are very, very rare. And I think the people that still have them either don't know what they have, or it's buried in a, you know, basement somewhere and grandpa's basement or something. And actually a majority of them went to Japan. So
Japan.
We do know that. Yeah, they were gifts that were given to the top retailers at the time in Japan. And so we do believe, and most of the 15 known have been sourced from Japan. And so we believe most of them are still there, and probably they're just unaware of what they have.
And is this your Instagram, Warehouse H Info?
Yep, that's correct.
So I find it interesting, you know, that the hazmat's coming out of Japan, but yet the black label, which I think is kind of earmarked, right, for Japan, is like a, it's a sub 90 proof.
It's like 80 proof, right?
89.
It's 80. Yeah.
And first question is, why is it 89 proof? And yet proof. The gold is much higher, right?
Yeah. The gold we're drinking is 103.
And before it was released domestically, the gold, you know, it was mostly Europe at a higher proof. And then also the green label, which I find kind of curious, is if that was actually kind of tailored for a certain part of Europe.
Yeah. And so answer to all those questions is really just the proof points over the years have been, I don't know 100% why they've released them, but clearly it was to have a range in the market based on different tastes and different palates and so forth. What I can tell you is that for the U.S., for the Japanese products, of which exclusive to Japan, there's the red, the black, and a gold version that's exclusive to Japan. For all three of those, they're aged longer than the counterparts elsewhere. So the red is a 93 proof, aged slightly longer, 1 to 2 years than the regular single barrel that we know here in the U.S. The gold, 103 proof over there, but aged longer. And then the black is the same 80 proof as the green special reserve, but again, aged longer. To answer your question about the special reserve, that was released initially. They'd already released black in Japan in 94. And it was, I think, if memory serves, 2000 when they released special reserve first to Australia. And it was done at 80 proof specifically because of the tax laws in Australia, which are proof related, or at least were. I'm not sure if they still are. But so it was done specifically for that market at a lower proof because of that.
Neat.
Where do you go to find out all this information on Blanton?
You go to Dom.
You know,
before there was warehouseh.com, where in the world did you go to get all this information?
You know, it's an amalgamation of just obsession, right? So, you know, one of the things I feel good about is that I'm well sourced in many of my facts. And when I say that, it's as good as the internet leads me from actual sourced, you know, articles. You know, you can dive back into the history. I mean, you know, folks might know archive.org. It's a great website to view internet in the past. I mean, I've gone everywhere in search of information and found, you know, I don't look at a message board as 100% factual, right? You know, it's really things that have been put out by the distillery, mentioned in a news publication. Those are, you know, probably the biggest sources. And it's interesting because even to this day, I have a great relationship with the distillery. Even to this day, they reach out to me with questions they get from people that write into them on obscure bottles. And they ask, yes, babe, have you ever seen this? And so it's a great relationship that we enjoy.
Are you now the world's foremost expert in Blanton?
Yes, clearly. You have to be. If the distillery is contacting him.
I don't like to be painted with that brush, but no, I look at it as it's all about sharing information. You know, to me, like I said, my goal is education and kind of helping people see, you can love or hate the brand, but respect it. That's kind of my tagline. And that's what the book's all about. It's historical. It's not your average whiskey book. Like, as you mentioned earlier, I don't, you know, go into nuances of flavor profiles and things like that. I'm really not a bourbon guy. I'm a collector of Blantons, which really, I mean, people just thieve when they hear that sometimes, but you know, I respect bourbon guys. Shows like yourself, everybody, I think it's great, but my personal passion is in the collecting and in the documentation of the brand's history.
Awesome.
All right. So what got you in? So you're a collector, or you do collect baseball cards and football. What else do you collect besides
Jordan rookie cards?
I've had that question before. You know, I don't really have any other current collections. You know, I will say that I tend to obsess about something, you know, whether it's a project I'm working on around the house or, you know, I definitely am hot and cold. I'll go all in on something. When I'm done with that, I move on. And, you know, I don't know that I'll ever move on from Blanton's, of course, now with the book being out there. But it is interesting because I look at that and I say, what's next? I can't start this journey again financially with another brand. And so you didn't, you know, there is not a lineup of Colonel Taylor bottles or, you know, anything like that, because once I get one, I've got to have them all, and then I have to write a book, and, you know, so it's, I don't know what's next, but yeah, not a lot of other collecting right now until I can afford it.
Well, what is your pick of the core offerings? Like, what to drink, not to collect,
yeah.
To drink.
So yeah, daily drinker for me, gold is the sweet spot. I think gold for me is just awesome. I do like higher proofs, so I can do straight from the barrels all day long as well. But you know what? When I run out of those, I'm pouring the 80 proof just like because I got it and I don't hate it. So, you know, for just a daily though, 103 proof gold is just such a sweet, sweet pour.
And if you, you know, for the listeners out there, that mash bill number two, you have Elmer T. Lee, Rock Hill Farms, you have Hancock Presidential Reserve, you've got Ancient Age and Blanton's. So do you gravitate towards any of the other brands of mash bill number two?
Not particularly, only because of the difficulty in finding some of those. I appreciate, and I do not make any points in the book to say Blanton's is the best bourbon out there by any means. You know, my palate's attuned to it just because I drink so much of it. But I'd say for me, you know, just going to the store, people will laugh, but I like Woodford. I just like plain old Woodford. It's easy to drink. It's got a sweetness to it. It's consistent. I can find it. You know, I don't have expensive tastes, you know, or complex tastes really.
Other than your collection. Yeah.
Other than my collection. Yeah. Which, you know, I get a lot of hate. I get a lot of online hate for people, you know, why don't you open them? Why don't you open them? Well,
oh, God.
I understand that theory, but they're just too valuable. I mean, you would not, I guarantee you none of this bourbon is good enough to open it. You know, when you talk about some of the older varieties and the sterling silver, I mean, there's no way.
Well, and I think when you were on Mash and Drum, they said that you were like the epitome of the tater, right? And you said in the book that you wear that with that's a badge of honor for you.
Badge of honor. Absolutely. I take all the hate because, I agree with half of it. You know, I actually like, there's times where I like shake my head. I'm like, you are such a tater, Dom. You know, I'm looking around and I am, but you know, again, it's at least I've taken it to a new level.
Yeah.
And, you know, mastered the tater craft. I mean, I'm not just a fly by night tater.
You are a tater.
Yeah. I was going to say like your depth of knowledge though, maybe you're some other version of a tater,
he's
but
like
it's
a
like
PhD tater.
Yeah. You're like, a PhD.
Yeah.
If you're when the distillery is calling you, by definition, I think you're something else.
Yeah, but right. You had never authored a book before.
No, I mean, no.
Any plans to do another one, like a follow-up?
I think I've written, I'm not a good blogger. If I was a good blogger, I would release probably tidbits related to Blanton's on, you know, occasion on my website. I have a blog there. I need to get better at it. My friend, David Jennings, who wrote the Wild Turkey book, is just a fantastic blogger and online has an online presence.
Yes.
So he wrote the foreword for Warehouse H. Mm-hmm. So shout out to him. But, you know, as far as me, I don't know there's that much more material to write about Blanton's unless, you know, something crazy happens and a bunch of archives are discovered. There have been a few tidbits I'd probably like to release or update in future versions, but I don't know. I enjoyed the writing experience. I'd love to find another subject I'm passionate about that I could dive into, and likely that probably wouldn't be bourbon.
Right.
Oh, really? So, or it could be bourbon. You just need a bigger house.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
bigger bank account. Yeah.
What do you do for a living? Are you allowed to tell us? You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Like CIA or anything. What do you do for a living?
No, I work for a large 3PL distribution company. Based on the East Coast and run all of their IT and integrations, things like that. So it's, you know, we'll just say IT by day.
And do you do the website
Bourbon
yourself?
By night.
I guess you do.
No. I my website I do.
Yeah, your website.
Website. Yeah,
my website, I do. Yeah, it's a little, there's some amateurish qualities to it, but, you know, I hacked it together pretty well, I guess.
You know, Ben, I was researching for this a little bit, this interview, and I'm not a Blanton's hater. I'm just one of those. I don't gravitate towards Blanton's if I want a good if I want a certain glass of a bourbon, but after doing the research on it, I'm pretty impressed, because if you realize that Elmer T. Lee really started this brand in honor of Albert Bacon Blanton, who saved in many ways the bourbon industry through his 60 years of suffering through World War II and everything else. The legacy of Blanton's is unparalleled. It really is in the bourbon industry.
No.
And so for you to write a book about this and kind of really dive into the details and, you know, what's being offered, I think for the listeners out there, just put aside all of what you hear and just understand that the name Blanton's, the reason this was created by Elmer T. Lee himself, I think means a lot in the history of bourbon as we know it. And so I think we all got to just kind of, you know, we need to speak more highly, regardless of the release of Blanton's and what they're trying to do in their international release. Yep. It's really impressive.
Well, you know, my take on it is, and you know, I read the book and I get the argument that you make also, but my take on it is, I think after folks drink for a while, some people become bourbon snobs, you know, and they look down on the basic stuff. And so when I enjoy the regular Blanton's. A lot
absolutely,
of people don't.
Absolutely. Yeah. And,
yeah. But I don't even think it's more than, I mean, like, there's nothing wrong. Blanton's a superior whiskey and all the lines that go with it. I think the if there's any animosity towards it, it doesn't stem because it's not a good whiskey.
Well, but a lot of people say it's not. I mean, you get on, like, when we...
Yeah, they don't know what they're talking about.
That's ridiculous. When you get the value, wouldn't like have, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a relative value. It's a value. It's a relative value question.
Right, right. If you pay $300 for a bottle, well, it's not, that's...
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I mean, you can get the... you're going to pay, $200 to $300 for the gold and for the straight from the barrel. But the regular, I mean, you can get it for... I mean, you typically can't find it for MSRP unless you know somebody, but you can get it for $110, $120.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think that's just fine. That's actually good value for the product. And even at $200 a bottle retail, that people, I mean, that's probably pushing it a bit. But from what we've seen with other bottles that are out there in the history of Blanton's, I mean, heck, I mean, honestly.
It's not crazy.
It's fairly priced, and the history is there. And I would challenge people to pull like another four or five bottles and brands that are out there that have the thickness and the history that this one has. So I'm going to start giving it a lot more love. And this book, I think people need to buy this book.
Well, the book is really cool. So if you don't like Blanton's and you've stayed with us this long through the interview,
if you're still listening,
honestly, get the book and check out the website, because I think you'll have a different appreciation for it. I've always enjoyed Blanton's, but I am an admitted self-proclaimed tater. I enjoy the hunt. Just Dom, you and I are essentially the same person.
Yeah.
So I love the hunt. I love being able to try to get it. And a lot of them I give away, you know, all the time. But there's something about Blanton's that really it's just for the average drinker, the novice drinker loves it. But you ask anybody that owns a liquor store, the number one question they get every single day, got any Blanton's? It doesn't matter where you are in the United States.
Yeah.
I will tell you, when I was reading your book, I was in Mexico. I stopped at the duty free to try to find if they had Blanton's. I don't care. You know, now they mark it up to like 169, but
man,
what else am I going to drink in Mexico? I'm not drinking tequila. I don't like tequila. I was going to get a bottle of Blanton's. I couldn't find it, but I think it's unnecessary, the hate that it gets. I enjoy it. Yeah. A lot of people.
And there's a few myths too, you know. I mean, I just like to say that, you know, people that think Buffalo Trace has this grand scheme and they're trying to, you know, hold back and control the market and drive up prices, none of the above. They're making significantly more of it than they did just 20 years ago. They've added a third bottling shift post-COVID, right around the time they've started releasing straight from the barrel and gold in the U.S., you know, and it's a product of aging, right? So you have to wait. Your forecasts, what you're seeing today is a result of forecasts that were made 6 to 8 years ago. So people that you know, think Buffalo Trace gets a lot of hate as well. And I don't think that's deserved, at least in this particular instance. You know, they're not manipulating the prices of Blanton's, and they're making as much as they can.
No.
Well, and the, you know, honestly, you think about an international premium bourbon brand, right? They have to keep up with that. I mean, they're one of the few bourbons that are actually circulated throughout Europe and Japan, as we were talked about the long history. There's a lot of pressure there to kind of release this. And then now they've gone above and beyond because Straight from the Barrel and Gold are domestically released in 750 MS.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get it.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. That to me tells you that they're doing what they can to kind of get these out to everybody.
And in the end, it's really age international as well. You know, Buffalo Trace controls very well with the brand. So they're always going to preserve their Japanese market. You know, they're going to be the ones ultimately that decide yes or no if we get a certain variety or how much of it we get. So, you know, Buffalo Trace is just the punching bag. They get all the credit and all the hate.
Oh, they're making money, so they don't care.
Yeah, they're fine. Hey, they're fine.
All right, Dom. So let me ask you: you can have a drink with anyone, living or dead, and you can pick any bottle in your collection. What are you drinking, and who are you drinking with?
Oh gosh, it's I got to go with the president. I'd say Abraham Lincoln. Just why not?
Abraham Lincoln.
And what am I drinking?
What are you
drinking?
Drink?
Something from the era. I don't know, like a back then, like an E, like what was it? OFC, the original OFC whiskey produced. Yeah. You know, at that time, you know, that would be. I'd want something.
All right, so I just want to note for the record, you would not have a drink with Colonel Blanton.
No, here's the thing. If you've read the book, there's a little bit of an undercurrent of kind of taking away some credit from Colonel Blanton and Elmer T. Lee. I mean, I pay them a lot of respect, but you know, there is so much of the story where it's like, oh, Colonel Blanton's the one who, you know, pioneered single barrel and Elmer T. Lee is the one who brought it to market. The reality is of the who invented single barrel. Well, first off, if you go back to the 1800s before bottle and bond, it was all single barrel. I mean, that's how it was released. And they wheeled them into the taverns and bottled them right there. And so then you fast forward and you say, well, even throughout the years, you know, Blanton, yeah, he liked warehouse age. Yeah, he liked sipping off certain barrels. But guess what? Every foreman, worker, everybody knew where the honey holes were, the sweet spots, the single barrels that were better. So, you know, he just, it's glorified marketing. And Elmer T. Lee brought that story forward, but he didn't do it because he was sitting around at age, whatever, 60, ready to retire and wanted to invent a new product and revolutionize bourbon. He did it because the two gentlemen I mentioned earlier, Ferdy Falk, Robert Baranaskas, they were marketing guys. They wanted to make a new product and they said, Elmer, what can you do? Yeah. So, you know, yes, he does deserve credit, but he was tasked with that and, you know, and came up with it. So I think the point is it's I respect the hell out of those guys, but I also like the rest of the story to be told because a lot of that is just, you know, marketing kind of
all story
put on the back of the label of, you know, and listen, those two guys for other reasons were instrumental to what they did in the business, the craft. You know, I could talk a lot about Elmer in particular, and he wasn't necessarily a huge master distiller that everybody thinks he was either. That was more marketing as well. But as far as what he did for the industry and how he ran, I mean, he ran the distillery, you know, throughout the 70s in its lowest point. I mean, it was, you know, he had significant layoffs. He had union challenges, he had natural disasters, you know, so he, for all those reasons, I have him on a very, very high pedestal, but, you know, I make some arguments elsewhere, I guess.
Well, if you haven't picked up the book, you should. Where do they buy it, Dom? Where can they pick it up?
Yeah. So you can go to warehouseh.com. It will immediately give you a link, but blantonsbook.com is the actual website, and all copies sold through my website. I do autograph, and there's a also customization if you want to add a message or, you know, happy birthday or something. So that's all through my website. You can find it on Amazon as well, but those are not autographed.
Yeah. So, and honestly, do you make more money if they buy it directly, obviously from you, right?
If they buy it, I like to say I get more of my money back because this is still a net negative. I never did it to make money, but you know, it's nice to get my money, my investment back sooter. Oh, so slightly, as you should. Slightly, yes.
And why wouldn't you want it personalized, right?
Yeah. I would want it personalized. Yeah. I mean, mine's awkward.
Honestly, that's bourbon is such a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought mine from warehouseace.com, I'm pretty sure, because it's autographed. Yep. But let me ask you this. since it is for research and since it is for a book, when you buy a bottle of Blanton's, is that a tax write-off?
You know, I think entertainment with clients is the actual category the IRS looks at, and that's, you know, there's actually some rules around that. It can't be too excessive. So unfortunately, no, I can't really get away with that one. But
you can't
nice.
Say it's for the book, so I'm writing it off.
That's right. I wish I could. I wish I could.
Well, stay out of jail.
That's right.
That's my
rule number
that's
one.
Right. That's my legal
advice.
That's right.
It's not worth it.
Don't mess with the IRS.
That's okay. Ben's a defense.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Sure.
You
I
go.
Mean, he does it all both guys, but
I would defend you for a couple of bottles.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
That's Dom, awesome. Thanks for coming
thanks
on,
so
man.
Much.
We appreciate it. Folks, you've got to check this book out. Pick up a copy, warehouseh.com or blantonsbook.com. Is that right, Dom?
Yep.
That's correct.
And those are autographed. Don't get it. I mean, Amazon's nice and, you know, it's delivery, but you want the autographed or the personalized one. You got a friend who loves Blanton's. Get it personalized. Dom's going to sign it. That's the way to go.
Yeah.
That's the way to go.
Thanks, so, Dom.
Appreciate you coming on, Dom.
I appreciate you guys. It was great being here.
All right. Take care.
That was awesome.
You know, I admire the OCD.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I mean, you know, to start off with just a bottle in 2017, and now he is, I mean, I don't think it's debatable. He's the
clearly
foremost expert on Blanton's.
No, I mean, the distillery contacts him. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big deal.
When did he say he didn't start really collecting until 2020?
Yeah, which is insane. And now he, honestly, there are bottles in this book and on his website.
Oh, I had no idea.
Not know existed.
I had no idea.
The sterling silver bottles. I had no idea.
No.
Well, and the relationship with Japan.
So that's
well,
what
that was the key.
That whole thing is crazy. So I mean, you started going through the mash bill number two brands.
Yep.
They're all Takara brands. So that's all contracted still. Like I feel like I'm an idiot. I didn't know any of that.
I didn't either. And I kind of thought the color, I thought most of these brands were more geared towards Europe, but no, he's throwing Australia out and really roots back to Japan.
Yeah, it's all Japan. It makes total sense.
It's all
I felt like an idiot after
it's,
I asked
it's Australia
that.
And Asia or whatever. So,
yeah.
Well, you know what you guys are getting for Christmas this year from me? Warehouse H book.
Oh, I thought a sterling silver bottle of Blanton's. One of the 15 in the world.
Did I understand him correctly? He said that's an $8,000 bottle.
I don't think he put a value on it.
I thought I heard that. Yeah. I thought I heard 8,000. Was he talking about something else?
It almost has to be more than that.
It has to
if there are 15 bottles in the world they know about, it's more than that.
Yeah,
has to be.
I think if it does anything, and we didn't have enough time to really go into the in-depth research of the history of like Blanton's and why it was named that, and
we'll bring it back on.
I just think that it's there's a lot more to the story, even for me, like going through the research now and really looking at it, preparing for this. And by the way, for our listeners, we spent a lot of time preparing for these podcasts.
Believe it or not.
We do. We know.
Well, hell, I read the book.
Ben
so
reads.
Proud of you.
Ben reads the books. I analyze the data.
I'm here.
And Kyle, he's the
guys,
voice.
Guys, I showed up.
Kyle's here for the sexy, smooth
voice of Bourbon Podcast. But no, I think I look at all of that, and there's a place in history for Blanton's. Not just because of the brand, but the name, the history, the connections to Japan, Japan's connections, not just to Blanton's, but to Four Roses.
Yeah, and in them both ways, all the Japanese whiskey's gone crazy. I mean, it's interesting. Yep. Yeah, I mean, to me, we kind of said it with him, but we always talk about value on a relative. I've never been too hardcore one way or another on Blanton's. I've always thought it was good whiskey, but it exploded so much. Because when I first got into whiskey, like you could buy it on the shelf and it was good. And I always thought it was, you know, it's like, yeah, that's a great premium whiskey. And then it went so far the other way that it's like, I'm never mad about having a Blanton's. I'm just not going to pay up for it or like seek it out.
Well, I'm not going to pay $169 or $200 a bottle for a regular Blanton's. Now
correct.
For the gold.
Or straight from the
I'll
barrel.
Pay, or he, for the straight, I'll pay $200.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not offended by that.
And the gold's going like 225-ish, 250, and the straight from the barrel and the secondary is going for, you know, 250 to 300. But I think they're worth it, honestly, because I think those are real. I mean, we drank the gold during the podcast today, and The note, the aroma was fantastic. Killer. The flavors, the finish.
Well, that's what's kind of interesting is, man. So pretty odd that the core offering, I think we would all argue, is like overpriced on a kind of market value. But then gold and straight from the barrel, especially for me, is like almost, I mean, it's fair, maybe even a touch underpriced. I think the gold's falling
to a point now where it's like low 200s. Yeah, and that's funny. Even the MSRP is, you know, it's above 100, I think, where I can't remember what
slightly.
It is, 130 or whatever, but it's still, it's a very superior, just a beautiful whiskey.
Yep.
When you start to like go to the, from the, and it's kind of like, it's not fair to peg Blanton's to the standard release when there are a multitudes of superior Blanton releases released all over the world, and they have a responsibility to the world because they've been doing it for so long, whether through Europe or through Japan.
Do you think if we did a regular Blanton's side by side with an Elmer T. Lee with a Hancock Reserve, that we'd be able to tell the difference?
Yes.
You do?
Do you?
Yes, absolutely. I've done that tasting across
the board. Why? How? Are they proofed differently?
They are proofed totally differently. So like the Hancock is a lower proof, but it is a beautiful, smooth drinking.
Oh, it's outstanding.
Whiskey. But I can tell you all day long. I mean,
I'm gonna challenge you.
But it's all the same mash bill, correct?
It is,
but different ages, different proofs. Yeah. Different parts of warehouse age. So what we can do is we can do all four. We can do Rock Hill Farms, Hancock President's Reserve.
I have everyone open.
Just for the record, you've missed on every double barrel we've done. Am I right?
No, I picked the 15, Kathy, buddy. 15. I bailed on you. Remember, Kyle.
But remember, the double barrel, it's not to try to pick. It's to say which one we like the best.
I know.
Without fear of
what I'm doing now.
Of the non-allocated. And it's funny, but when you do that, because I think a lot of the non-allocated bourbons get a bad rap.
They don't get the hype.
They don't get the hype. And I think Blanton's, it's got the hype, but I think it gets more hate than it deserves.
And yeah, it's become like the epitome of the chase and the tater, blah, blah, blah.
That's right. I think
is unfair.
Yeah, and I think that's why people dislike it. I don't think they dislike it because it doesn't taste good. I think they dislike it because they can't find it.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that are going and ask, hey, you got any Blanton's?
Well, maybe it goes further than that. It's the whole psyche of the who people hunting down all the letters and the...
Yep.
Yeah, I get that.
Right.
Yeah, that part of it is like a big turnoff for me too.
Really? I think that's fun.
But for somebody who really loves their whiskey, like that part of it, it kind of like puts like stones in my stomach.
But you're a collector. And
I'm a drinker and a collector.
You're both. You are both. So you appreciate the you know, the ones that are out there trying to find that in with the apostrophe.
I just don't. I mean, I'll get it. Look, with the Blantons, the websites that are out there, and everybody's looking for certain dates and numbers and this and that, and I don't know, man. I'm not going there.
All right. I bet you we go back a year from now, Joe's bunker will be full of like every
beer.
No. Yeah.
So his vertical is going to be the dump date every single day of the year.
365. No,
my Blanton's starts and ends with that Blanton de whiskey I have at 136.6.
That's all you got?
I've got them all. I got everything.
Of course he does.
He's like, that's a start and set. But I also have everything.
But the regular Blantons, like, I mean, I've done verticals on those, and I honestly prefer, like, for instance, that Hancock Presidential Reserve to it.
Oh, it's good.
Just a little lower proof. Yeah. It's smoother to me. But I mean, again, Blantons is a single barrel. So, I mean, every bottle can be
different. I can't tell the difference. Honest to God, I cannot tell the difference. I really enjoy Blantons.
Yeah.
I mean, I always have a bottle open. I can't tell the difference between one barrel and the other.
Come on, man. I mean, I'm not that smart.
You're actually that smart. I just don't think we have the palate. There are probably people that can, but I can't.
I think if you put it next to Rock Hill Farms or an Elmer T. Those Elmer T. Lees are just...
They're good.
They're outstanding. All right. And they're two to 4 years older. And
yeah, let's do it.
All right. This has been our longest episode in the history of Bourbon Podcast.
Sorry.
Folks, pick up Warehouse H. I'm telling you, get it directly from Don. Don't get it on Amazon. Get it at warehouseh.com. He will autograph it. You can personalize it. Give it as Christmas gift, birthday gift. It is a really cool book. And you're going to see things in there that you did not know exist that I promise you.
Yeah.
Whether you love Blantons, hate Blantons, whatever, you need to have this book. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get